This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food. Of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. We're all aware of the power of social media in disseminating information, whether it's humanizing stories and even effecting change. But in the healthcare industry, it can be a tricky business. How do you find the balance between abiding in industry regulations and improving public health communication? Well, one doctor has done this very successfully, and he's Dr. Benny Roussany, a cardiologist and co-author of the medical novel Diagnosis 2. With almost 13,000 likes on Facebook and more than 52,000 followers on Twitter. Welcome to the show, Dr. Benny. How are you today?
Hi, Meera. Thank you for having me.
You've done this very well. When did you start?
Well, in Twitter, I started back in, 3 years ago. But in terms of social media, if you consider blog as part of the social media, I've started writing blog back in, nearly 10 years ago, while I was a medical officer. So I suppose when you're writing blog, you sort of have this interaction with people on the line. So they tend to, you know, give their feedbacks, and then you write back, you reply. So I suppose that's the origin of social media back then, before Facebook was online.
But why did you think there was a need to even blog? Because not everybody wants to blog.
I think it comes down to your passion in writing. I like to write. Not to say that I know how to write, but I like to write just to express my, you know, feelings, thoughts, emotions. I mean, when you work, you're dealing with a lot of people, patients, and they have stories. And sometimes you need to reflect back on those stories. Otherwise, you will not be able to learn anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And how is social media, in your opinion, how is it shaping the future of the healthcare industry so far?
I think social media has a lot of potential. I mean, come to think of it, patient-doctor interaction in clinics are quite limited. As you can imagine, a government doctor who has to see, you know, many patients in their clinic are unable to spend, you know, a long period of time. And probably tops is about five to 10 minutes maybe in a busy hospital. So I'm sure there are a lot of questions that left unanswered within those interaction. And this patient will, you know, return back to their home and maybe ask by their families, you know, what did the doctor say? And then the patient will say, I can't really remember what the doctor told me. So this left us with a lot of gap out there.
Yep.
So I think having social media and doctors on it would perhaps bridge this gap.
But now everybody also depends on Google. A lot of people tend to Google symptoms, and not the best thing, honestly. Can be an alarmist sort of a thing for some people. But younger people are relying more and more on the internet. But do you think it's a good thing?
I think it's a fantastic thing. Now, with Google, actually it depends on how you look at it. It's all about perspectives. You can look at in an angle that, you know, patients nowadays know too much about their disease and they are sort of trying to dictate the whole treatment strategy. But I look at it in a way of empowering the patient. Once the patient has a lot of information in their hands and the doctor can able to sort of point those information to the right way, like maybe some of the things might be inaccurate. So this is where the doctor's role is to help the patients to sort of streamline the readings that they've done at home. And I think the more the patient know about their disease and the more they are empowered, the more they'll be comply to sort of the treatment strategy, whatever that has been, you know, planned in the clinic. So in terms of this younger population who use a lot of internet, this actually paves a greater future for the future healthcare medicine in Malaysia.
Fantastic. Yeah. But don't you think that there's a downside to it? Because let's take the Zika virus for an example. I mean, it's gone all over. It's all over the news. It's all over Facebook. It's all over the internet. There's still not much known about the extent in which this virus can affect human beings. In that sort of a case like that, how do you think social media has helped or has it not?
I think it has helped. For example, Zika, for instance, even I myself didn't know much about it. Although we know that the virus has been around in the last 30 or 40 years, but usually confined in certain countries, certain climate in the world. But, you know, now we have Aedes mosquito, and we know that Aedes is a vector of Zika. So in a way that when people read about what is being told online, that although Aedes is a vector and we have Aedes here in Malaysia, but we don't have Zika virus in Malaysia yet. So we can tell them that, hey guys, although there's a fear there, but there's something that we can do here. Things are still under control in Malaysia at least, and these are the steps that we can take. So by using internet, we could tell or we can spread this information to a wider population at a faster speed. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, instead of waiting for the next paper to come out or magazines to come out next week and probably there have many more findings being known about, you know, things like Zika, we can spread this information relatively faster than our conventional.
But it can be detrimental. It opens up for speculation. It opens up for sensationalization. That's a downside. I see it that way sometimes.
Yeah, you're right. In a way that there is a downside to everything in this world. I mean, there are two sides to everything, even coins. So I suppose we have to play a bigger role here. Whenever there's something that is, you know, I mean, Zika could be one of those things that is today, but what about next week or next month?
Yeah.
So the challenge will always be there. But I think it is not the matter of how many times we fall, but how many times we pick ourselves up and try to fight this war.
And your fellow medical professionals, are they on board as much as you wish they are on social media, on the internet?
I wish a lot more would join this effort. You know what? This Medtut MI was when it first coined by the founder, Dr. Khairul. He's a doctor in Jengke Hospital. Even though being in Jengke Hospital, you know, it's a district hospital. It's not inside Klang Valley. But he had played a lot of role in trying to educate the public using Twitter. So he tweeted. I also tweet, but we all tweet, you know, in terms of personal effort. But with this Medtut MI, we have sort of come up with a proper platform for all the doctors to join in, collaborate, and we even have many doctors from all sort of different specialty. So now we have at least about 53 members, with coming from 38. Or 35 different backgrounds, not just doctors, mind you, we also have pharmacists, mm-hmm. We have dentists, we have all this what we call allied health medicine personnel, like audiologists, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, even a vet, we have that. So with this sort of effort, we can get our move sort of streamlined.
And this is Diagnosis 2?
Oh no, Diagnosis 2
is... This is the Twitter?
That's a different project. Diagnosis 2 is a writing project, a collaboration that I have with another six doctors, varies from specialists to MO to a houseman. Diagnosis 2 is actually a medical anthology, is short stories, then to bring the awareness of the readers in Malaysia about what is being a doctor really like.
Right.
I mean, being a doctor not really means that you are a guy in a white coat that meet and greet you in the hospital, but a doctor also have their own life. A doctor can be a father to a son, a wife to a husband. They all have life, and this life sort of define them as a person behind the white coat. So I think this is something that is not really widely known by our readers.
So the, you know, multidisciplinary team you were referring to,
correct,
is on Twitter and Facebook. They're present there. The interaction comes through on those platforms?
Initially, well, Medtut MI, well, you know, the word tweet itself in the Medtut means that our core business is in the tweeting. But that was from 2 months ago. But as time goes by, we realize that, you know, being in Twitter alone is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little bit of sidetrack. We, as a group, have not even met each other in
right.
the last 2 months. We just had our meeting last Saturday, in which, you know, even some of us could not attend it. This just goes to show that, you know, doctors are roughly a busy people. We are unable to sort of meet up on a regular basis. But having to sort of meet online help us to streamline this effort.
Yep. Medtweet My has about 52,500 followers. How did you get them all on board? How did you make health sexy enough for people to actually want to follow you?
My strategy is basically try to add up a little bit of humor inside my tweet. So you can't go that serious, you know, with people. People will sort of, hey, I mean, if I tell them, hey guys, stop smoking. Mm-hmm. That's bad for you. People say, I've listened to that, like, you know,
yeah,
100 times before.
What a nag.
But yeah, what a nag. You're right. So I tweet, for more info on heart disease, please continue smoking.
Right.
It's sort of a humor.
So you use reverse psychology.
Correct. And that alone, I think, gathered about 2,000 retweets.
Wow.
And people sort of like it, and they sort of retweet to their families. And you know, once they are entertained, perhaps, hopefully, they will look into the real message behind that tweet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and hence, you've got 52,500 over how? What's the duration?
Well, I started to read over 3 years ago.
Okay.
So that's over 3 years. But nowadays, I see some of my newer colleagues who just joined Twitter, maybe 5 months ago. And with the MedTweet MI, they even gathered, you know, their followers at about 10,000 in the span of 3 months. So that's just an achievement.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to find out how we can leverage on that.
Correct. So with this sort of MedTweet MI, sometimes people ask me, you know, doc, can I ask you something about ONG? You know, gynecology?
Yes.
I see that's not really my territory, but you know what? I will ask my ONG friend on the MedTweet MI to answer that question.
Okay.
So there's sort of a sort of cross-referral.
And this interaction happens online or offline? Because sometimes medical queries can be personal. I mean, you don't really want to discuss it on a public space.
Correct. It's a real time. So whatever that people, once they press the send button, it will be on air or online immediately. So one thing that we try to stress on this MedTweet MI strategy is not really to give them a diagnosis.
Right.
Because that will be difficult. Because in a real sort of clinical medical practice, you need to take a proper history. As you know, tweet has only have
144 characters.
So
yeah.
That is, you know, it's impossible to take a proper history from A to Z. So that is one thing. And second, followed by, you know, investigation, like taking blood samples, urine samples, stool sample, to come to a proper diagnosis, and also physical examination. So what we could tell them is, this could be 1-3, but for more detailed assessment, you still need to see your own local doctor.
Okay.
We can just get the ball rolling.
Right, but the conversation started.
Yeah, but they need to take that next step to see the doctor.
Okay, up next we'll find out more about rules and regulations that govern communications with the healthcare industry, because we do know that when it comes to certain issues, only government issues, press releases and updates as far as diseases are concerned. I remember the rabies being one, a few other, especially global sort of health challenges. So we'll come back and find out more with Dr. Ben Roussani, who's a cardiologist and co-author of Diagnosis 2, up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health. So good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sevasodhi. We have Dr. Ben Roussani in the studio with us. He's a cardiologist and co-author of Diagnosis 2. He's also one of those who's helping the initiative of hashtag MedTweetMy. And we're trying to find out how they've used social media so effectively in bringing people to discuss health issues. Rules and regulations that govern the healthcare industry, Dr. Benny. It is... of course, how do you manage government and yourselves and what information you're giving out?
I think there are official channels that are being provided by the government. For example, the Ministry of Health, they have their own website. Our DG, Datuk Nur Hisham Abdullah, also has his own Twitter, also has Facebook, and he's quite active online. And we take this as an opportunity to take the official statement from the government from time to time. For example, when it comes to issue like Zika, It is a more international issue. So we try to align our opinion with the World Health Organization. So if, let's say, somebody asks us on Twitter, what is your stance on, you know, issue A, which is sort of international, We will take WHO as our sort of main source. But if it's more like towards a national issue, we will go to KKM, the Ministry of Health, and look at their website and talk to certain officials before we, you know, open our mouth. So this is important because we don't want to get the wrong messages or mixed messages to the society. And when it comes to regulation, I suppose, you know, we have this, what we call a Personal Data Protection Act.
Yes.
So this is a sort of an act to safe protect patients' confidentiality. Because you probably have heard in the past, there have been some issues where some inappropriate images was put up on Facebook, online, which might expose patients' identity. So for me, I always use common sense with the rule that, you know, if in doubt, don't post it. And try not to put up any information that might identify a patient's identity. For example, a file with a patient's name code, an IC number, mm-hmm. or if you want to take a photo, don't take a photo of a patient. Be careful, because sometimes this can be abused or can be manipulated in so many ways.
So your team is all well aware of that. They all, you know, take on the same sort of guidelines and they're very cautious when they post.
Yeah. We sort of have that at the back of our mind. But from time to time, we do need to remind, you know, each other about this fact.
Yeah. In your practice, I mean, you're a cardiologist yourself at the National Heart Institute. Has social media changed how you approach medical practices or how you deal with your patients?
Yes. You know, back then, before the Twitter, Facebook was up there, I sort of, in my own practice, when I see patients, it's more like a clear, straightforward interaction. But nowadays, as I have learned more online, what is the main issues out there, like, for example, you know, what are the main concerns? I will be more proactive in a way that if some people comes in and they have heart problem, but they might, you know, be quite embarrassed to ask about, you know, some personal detailed questions. I might gonna ask them offhand, like, is there everything's okay at home? Is there, you know, anything that you want to ask me about, you know, relationship between man and wife, things like that? Because some of these questions are considered taboo. But when once I got online, I realized that these are actually the real concern that people that ask you. Which they might be a bit embarrassed to ask, you know.
Okay.
You know, as in person.
Because there's a certain amount of anonymity.
Yeah, like for example, you know, how safe it is to resume sexual intercourse between, you know, man and husband and wife after having a heart attack, for example. Mm-hmm. So I probably could, you know, ask that questions, knowing that that is some of the main concern out there, actually.
Do you think everybody should be online or should take the initiative to start going online?
I think that depends on your personal sort of
preference.
Yeah, not everybody like to tweet their thoughts to the world.
Yes.
Sometimes when you do have a online account, people can have sort of direct access to you. So it depends on the personality of the person. If, like for me, I don't mind really if a person want to ask me. But we do have to keep certain boundaries, knowing that what is safe to be conveyed online and what is not. Overall, I don't have any personal problems having an account online. People do sometimes tweet or interact or ask questions that is not necessarily medical. Mm-hmm. So you do have that sort of, you know, question from time to time. But, you know, you try to be, you know, nice to people. You respect people's opinion and don't try to get into qualms, you know, online. It's not worth it.
What do you think of celebrity doctors? I mean, we've heard of Dr. Oz and Dr. Phil on television.
Yeah.
Do you think that's necessarily a way in which we can also reach out to the general public?
Yeah, I think it works. I mean, the status of celebrity doctor, I don't think is there yet in Malaysia. It's probably right. Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz is mm-hmm. one of them. But in Malaysia, I think what people really want, if doctor figure online that they could, you know, probably go back to and ask questions. So if we are there, if we are giving that chance for them to be able to do that, I think for me that's fine enough. No matter whether you are a celebrity or not, I think that that's not the main factor.
What about celebrity patients? We've heard of Angelina Jolie, Robin Williams. I mean, what about Jim Carrey? He had a rant on anti-vaccinations. I mean, that doesn't really bode well, especially for the medical fraternity. How, you know, if you posed a question like that on Twitter, how would you manage that?
Okay, for me, I didn't know that Jim Carrey is the anti-vaccine guy. Anyway, well,
he went on a rant last year.
Oh, really? too bad for him. I guess none of his kids will be vaccinated.
So anyway, not the best thing, but, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, with every issues in the world, not just medicine, politics, economy, you have two sides to every camp. It depends. I mean, for us, for me, at personal level, I could only give that information to people. Either for them to take it or not, it's really up to the individual. We can only give information, but we can't force that information to them. There are one thing that I always, a rule that I adhere to online is never to quarrel with people. Some people, they just don't really want to know the truth. They just want to troll you. They just want to see how you react to controversies, mm-hmm. to argument. So for me, it's not really worth it to really go down and, you know, get into a argument online. Because in the end of the day, we are the professionals. It doesn't look good on the doctors to engage in an unhealthy sort of argument online.
Right, okay. Yeah. So you just end it?
Yes, I say thank you for sharing your thoughts and opinions, but these are the what we know as a doctor.
Yep. Stick to your principles.
Yeah.
In the Malaysian context, does social media play a role in how we can help mould policy? Let's just take hypothetically an example, right? Say you start or I start a movement to get people wanting to bring in the dengue vaccine. For an example, Malaysia hasn't brought in the dengue vaccine. I think Mexico has approved it and, you know, we're still thinking about it. But let's just say I have a huge following and I feel very strongly that the vaccine should come in and then I start propagating. Do you think that would have the power to influence policy making?
Okay, interesting questions. I think it comes down to a basic principles of petition, right? People have done that on the road, on the streets.
And now it's happening on social media as well.
Yeah, I think probably with that strategy, you can gather a lot more voice in your cause. You know, to be honest, I don't know, but perhaps there might be a role. We know that, you know, majority voice do sometimes works. But how much it will work to a certain issue is still, I think we need to take it at an individual basis, point-to-point, case-to-case scenario. With the sort of the dengue vaccine example, I think there must be reasons why the KKM is taking...
So that brings me to also how, you know, government reacts to these sort of petitions online, right? I mean, you really need to be quick. You need to not allow people, give people the time to speculate. So it goes all round. People who are on the receiving end have to be very quick on social media as well.
Definitely. I mean, even with such decision being put at halt, doctors must play a bigger role in trying to, you know, educate people, saying that things are still in the process, they have not decided.
The population can be divided on the dengue vaccine like this. I mean, you'll probably even have some healthcare professionals on one side and some on the other. But it's a constructive discussion, don't you think?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's all about constructive discussion between people and government. There's no right or wrong thing. It's just a matter of, you know, when would be the right time to introduce it. I think they are doing a lot of studies on it now and looking at... We have to study our own logistics, our own country.
Cost.
You know, medical cost. That's very important. Yep. That differs from country to country. And plus, you know, the fact that in Malaysia, I think, this is my personal opinion, I think the dengue situation in Malaysia might not be similar to another country because there are four serotypes in Malaysia, dengue. But I think there are some research that done locally saying that there might be a fifth
one,
serotype that might not be there out there. So we need to study what, in our local context, whether this vaccine is the right way to go for our country, for our patients.
Yep. And that discussion can actually move online for people to better understand.
Correct. As long as there is a continuous dialogue out there to educate people, what is what is the fact, what are the myths? I think that's what matters at the end of the day.
What about information overload? There is so much out there as far as health is concerned.
Oh, you can tell me
where do you focus? Who do you take seriously? I mean, if you look at... Every day on my Facebook feed, I mean, there's tons of alternative treatments, you know, popping up at me, you know, this juice or, you know, grind that stuff and it's good for you, you know.
That actually reminds me the original concept why MedTweetMI was brought up to Twitter is that because of myth, We as a country, as a nation, has a lot of medical myth out there.
It's culturally based.
It has been, you know, there for the longest time. My grandma used to tell me, you know, some stuff that now being a doctor, I can tell. I wish I could tell her that, grandma, that's not right. That's not true. My personal all-time favorite, which has gathered about 35,000 retweet and 10,000 likes, is that people ask me whether, you know, take a shower at night, can that cause, you know, wet lungs or pneumonia? And the answer is no. There's no
evidence
to say that if you take a shower at night, you can have those things. I mean, pneumonia is an infection. You can get it when you are, you know, when you got bacteria or virus. And wet lungs are usually a complications of heart failure. So none of those things are true. So even Matthew Nema has this hashtag called Perang Melawan Mitos. I mean, if you type that hashtag, you will see hundreds and hundreds of myths out there that we are trying to answer. So coming back to that information's overload, I say that, you know, if you have questions, then ask. If we know, we would answer that. As far as much as we can tell you, what we put there is medically accurate.
And with patients being more informed, do you think it's more of an asset or a challenge for the healthcare system?
I think both. We will love the challenge. I mean, in terms of asset and benefit, you know, it will help to help doctors as well. I mean, if you have a patient who goes back or who tweet about what he or she learned to his friends or families, I think in the long run, it will give benefit to a lot of people out there.
Do you think more doctors should be on social media?
I think, yeah. I think we should have more doctors, not just doctors, but allied health professionals, mm-hmm. like, you know, physiotherapists, vet, OT, even aesthetic medicine, try to tell people what is actually matters, what is not, what is medically accurate and what is not.
You've got 12,000, almost 13,000 likes on Facebook, and as I mentioned earlier, 52,500 Twitter followers as of February 29th on MedTweet My. How many of those numbers are actually interacting with you?
Very good questions. I think not everybody interact. Some of them are silent readers. Some of these accounts, I suspect, are bots. You know, they are bots, stands for, I think, robots. That means they are not manned by actual person. Mm-hmm. There are some algorithm computer out there that sort of have a fake account. But I do have, the interaction depends on the, I suspect probably about half of that figures actually interact with me, you know, from time to time. I'm aware that some of them, you know, interact more than others. Mm-hmm. But I suspect when I look at the way they retweet the tweet or like it, and even let's say some people read it, they might not follow me. But they, at least if they retweet it, I know that the interaction's there.
Yeah. It's very hard to really figure out, isn't it?
I'm really not a computer.
You're a doctor, of course.
I'm a computer literate guy.
So what do you hope for to accomplish through healthcare social media in the long run?
In the long run, I would like to see more people interact online, because we don't have time enough to spend with patients, you know, in the real setting. So at least if we could answer some of these questions online, for me at personal level, I feel that's a sense of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. This need to be done in a proper way. A doctor need to be able to know what is allowed to be informed online. We don't want to, you know, create unnecessary panic by spreading a wrong information. Yeah. So that's number one rule. Number two, I think the interactions on Twitter, it can be sort of being done in a more, you know, nice way, nice, stimulating, sort of, you know, civilized manner. Because sometimes you do have people who really got angry when we, you know, try to tweet something that is, you know, that is true. Like, for example, anti-vaccine or giving birth at home, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people, you know, unable to control their emotions online. But that depends on that person.
Yeah.
I just wish that hopefully in the future we can, you know, we can do this in a more, in a healthy environment way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get familiar eventually. It's social media is still relatively new to Malaysia, really.
Correct.
Mm. And etiquette is crucial. Everyone's struggling with etiquette online, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, social etiquette, that's what I'm trying to say.
I think online etiquette, and I think we will eventually get there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Dr. Benny Roussany, a cardiologist and co-author of Diagnosis 2. Also, he was a part of hashtag MedTweetMy, if you'd like to go on and follow. Is this a Malay platform, Dr. Benny?
Not really. We tweet bilingual.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. Yeah. If you'd like to follow, and they're on Facebook as well. Talking to us about social media and healthcare on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.